You know, I had a whole thing worked out where I was going to try to improvise a bit based on the opening intro for this TV series, and then I realized the guy that speaks in that is awful, so I didn't do it. We're talking about The Max! Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show where I want my MTV animation. And we are here today to talk about 1995's The Max. My name is Drew, and I need my friend who isn't the same character from the first episode that's in the third episode. I don't even know. Miles, how are you, my friend?
What's up, buddy? I've actually, you know, when we said we were going to do some MTV animation from yesteryear, this was really what I wanted to do. Like, I knew we needed to do liquid television for academic purposes.
Yes.
But I really, like, because I remember the comic coming out when I was a kid, because Image was a very hot ticket when it first burst on the scene in the early 90s. And just in the same way, it kind of burst again in the 10s with the kind of like self-published or indie comic explosion. Like, in you had just killer titles coming out. You had Saga and Walking Dead and all the stuff that came out
for sure,
like
for
in
sure.
The late aughts, early 10s. And so there was a lot of hype around this show. And I remember catching, I don't know if I caught it live. I remember seeing it kind of later at night, which it has a late night vibe to it.
Well, the where we watched it, and we had to, because this did get a DVD release, mm-hmm. but it's not regularly available right now. But the version that we watched featured sort of the intro and outro to the to the arc that it was part of, which is called MTV
Oddities,
which was a Liquid Television spinoff that aired, I believe, Sundays at 10 p.m.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Which is like, Sundays at 10 is like, wow, that is Adult Swim airs a bunch of stuff then.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's late night if you're 11 years old, like I was.
Yeah. But, yeah, and this show, it was this show and The Head, which we chose to focus on The Max versus The Head.
I remember watching The Head back in the day and not liking it, so I wasn't really interested in revisiting it.
Which, and I wasn't super familiar with either, because of course I didn't get MTV until this stuff was all well off the air. So it was interesting to me to kind of get into this, because The Max is one that I have heard, you know, I've heard that people like it. I've heard of it both from the comic angle and the TV show angle. So where do you want to begin with The Max? Because this is...
So the cool thing about... I mean, not the cool thing, but like the thing about The Max is... I mean, part of it is... It is very much an extension of Sam Keith, the creator of The Max, who we like literally lost this time last month. He passed away on March 15th, but he is the co-creator of The Sandman and the creator of Zero Girl, as well as, I mean, has been part of so many iconic runs because of his very specific art style. I mean, he's done stuff with Judge Dredd. He's done stuff with Batman and Lobo and Aliens. And like, his art style is just something that I always thought was really cool, because it's this kind of like, it's not necessarily horror art, but it's so close to it because it's very dark and it's got a scratchy style and it feels like it should be horror for a lot of it. And some of it is the Sandman stuff and some of his Lobo stuff and some stuff in The Max. But it's such a different style. And to me, it kind of represents, I think, what MTV was going for in the early 90s with their animation. Like, I feel like The Max is the perfect project for MTV in 1995.
Because it's so high quality animation. Like, it didn't
the
feel...
The animation is phenomenal.
It's so, so good. And it was directed by a guy named Greg Vanzo, who has done a number of things of that era. Like, he...
Yeah, he's on one of your favorites.
I mean, he was on The Simpsons. He was on Amazing Stories. He was on Futurama.
The Critic.
Oh, he did The Critic. He worked on...
Yeah, he was a supervisor on The Critic.
he is apparently, like, part of... He is the founder of Rough Draft Studios, is the key. Which Rough Draft Studios is the animation studio that does all of these things. Like, the Max was the first one there. Futurama, Baby Blues, Star Wars The Clone Wars, Drawn Together.
Drawn Together. Should we revisit that at some point?
No. I don't know. I have no desire to. I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now. The Napoleon Dynamite cartoon.
Ugh.
Disenchantment, which I need to finish. Okay. Ted, the animated series.
Which I absolutely adore. Watch Ted. It's so good. I'm going to make Drew do it at some point.
I need to. The Johnny Rehab commercial from RoboCop 3. That was
which
a Rough Draft Studios
joint. I absolutely
joint.
Remember. That sounds like I'm making a joke. No. I 100% remember that because I'm a RoboCop fiend.
So I
love that he's had his hand in so many pies, and it makes sense that it starts with the Max, because I mean, I think the one thing moving from Liquid Television to the Max, because even after Liquid Television, you have like what Beavis and Butthead, and that is still a very specific kind of scratchy style, whereas the Max feels like it's really informed by Batman the Animated Series and Gargoyles, where it kind of feels it's got that really dark, like, and this is pre-Spawn too, but it's that same influence of like, I don't know that they use black paper, but it feels like they use black paper.
Yeah, at least in some scenes. But yeah, so the animation is so, but the animation also changes. There is not frequent but decent enough use of early CG animation in this as well. That was surprising to see from something from 1995, but I guess that was also like the thing that was constantly being touted around, you know.
Well, apparently a lot of the animation was like literally ripped from panels of the comic.
Yeah, which you can tell because there's a lot of like still images that are like, there's nothing moving, but the camera's panning over it kind of thing, especially early on.
Yeah, I just looked up for an example. I just typed in the Max, and like literally one of the first things I saw is like, I'm sending it to you now, is literally there is a shot in the show that is the exact same thing as the panel I just sent you with Dr. Gone and the Max.
Mr. Gone. Despite the fact that he is a doctor of the something something arts, I don't know,
right?
A practitioner, but not a very good one, because I still have to deal with this.
I loved that, and I absolutely want to read the Batman crossovers, because that has got to be wild.
Absolutely. So let's dive into what we can tell of the story of the Max, because this is a, like, we talked about how Sam Keith co-created Sandman, which
he only stayed on for 5 issues.
Yeah, and he did art for that. I don't know that how much he was involved in the writing process of that.
I mean, that's a conversation for a different day, because the creation process, especially for a comic like that, is typically very
collaborative.
So I would absolutely give him credit, even though Neil Gaiman often takes it. But like, so many great artists were involved in the creation of the Sandman that made the Sandman what it was.
Sure. So we have the Max, who is this dude, and it is a suit. It's not, that's just, that's a, it's a suit that he's wearing with a mask. That it's not like it, it, it's not that he just looks like that, because you, it, you, you, it's hard to tell early on until he gets hurt and there are holes in the costume that you can see, you know, humanoid skin tones coming through. And mm-hmm. he is in the real world, a homeless guy who is attached to, you know, this social worker named Julie. But
which it is a lot less creepy than the, than it sounds.
Yes.
Like, but when you say, oh, this homeless guy's attached to this girl named Julie, it sounds like, oh, this is going in a direction I'm uncomfortable with. It will, but not in the way you think.
Yeah.
And it's, but yeah, it's not like that.
But he is also transported against his will to this sort of alternate dimension that he calls the Outback. Now, he calls it Australia at first, but mm-hmm. another character refers to it as Pangea, so he starts referring to it as Pangea himself. And it is basically this crazy world with all of these weird creatures. But in this world, he is, and we'll talk about the is, but in this world, the Max is a hero. He's super strong. He's a defender. And he is, what do they call her? The Jungle Queen? Is that what she is referred to?
The Leopard Queen.
Leopard Queen. Thank you. He is the defender of the Leopard Queen, who just so happens to look exactly like this real world Julie character. And that's where, and that's the kind of the log line that I knew before watching this show. Now, had you had any reference for the Max? Had you watched any of this or read any of this beforehand?
I mean, I saw episodes back in the day, but literally when I was 11 years old, and I retained none of it. I remember images. I remember seeing the comic in stores, but no, I really had not read or watched much of the Max. And what I had seen, I mean, I just felt like a dream, because I mean, it was on late at night. I was 11 years old. So I haven't really had any proper experience with the Max.
Yeah. And I didn't either. I knew of the character and what the character looked like, and the big, the Max, M-A-X-X kind of logo up on the, you know, comic covers and whatnot. So yeah, that's kind of what we know to start with. And then it just sort of goes, and it goes places that I had no anticipation that that's where it was going.
Right.
Like, this is a show that plays with real world concepts. So you have Julie, who has had some sort of trauma in her past that she is attempting to escape from. But the way that she is attempting to escape from it is by doing unlicensed social work out of her own apartment. But her apartment is weirdly in this really weird looking like terrace apartment that mm-hmm. there's no way she could possibly afford. So why does she live there?
Well, you say that, but also like the apartment and the area is completely like run down.
Yes, exactly. It's this gross thing. Like, and the first time we meet the Max, he's literally in a soaking wet cardboard box talking about how, I mean, you mentioned the referencing Batman, the animated series and stuff like that. There's the Max does a lot of internal monologue about what's going on, or at least we think it's internal monologue.
No, it's not internal. That's that ongoing joke is so funny, because he's like, said it out loud again, didn't I?
I said it out loud again, didn't I?
Yeah, I really enjoy that. And especially there's bits in that are absolutely informed by Batman animated series, when the camera kind of focuses on the Max's eyes when he's in the shadows and does the little squint. Like, they love doing that, and I loved them doing that. This, I think what's also so fun about it is, yes, the Max is supposed to be a superhero, which makes, and the way he narrates himself, you get this idea that, oh, he's going to be this kind of like Spawn, like, you know, because he feels not dissimilar from Spawn, because Spawn lives on the streets. and is effectively a homeless superhero. But Spawn isn't actively terrible at his job. Because, like, that's the funniest part is, like, while the Max is strong and does often, like, win the day in his battles, like, he's a big goober.
He is, and he talks out loud. He narrates everything he's doing, which lets his enemies get the drop on him.
It's like a darker The Tick.
Yeah, but it's also the idea that when he's in the Outback, he's super strong, but when he's in the real world, he's just regular strong. Like he's still strong. He's still strong, but he's not like superhuman strong. He's like big strong man strong.
So it depends, because then sometimes he's fighting like shark people, and
but he spends most of his time running away from the shark guy.
Well, he does, but like, yeah, there is some wild stuff going on. I still don't understand why he became little.
Well, that's kind of the
thing. Like, there's like an entire like episode or two where he's like a action figure size being chased by one of the Izzes, and I'm like, wait, what happened?
Well, because there's a meta universe thing that seems to be going on.
Right. No, I understand that aspect, but when it happened on screen, I was like, wait, what?
And you know, I guess spoilers for something that's 30 years old.
Yeah, we're going to spoil this show. So if you don't want to hear any spoilers,
let us say one thing. This show is really rad, and yes, it was very challenging. It is challenging. Yes. And there are some things that they say in it that are like weird to hear on TV in the 90s and would be weirder to hear on TV today. But I think it's worth it, because it's really unique, and it's 13 10-ish minute episodes of a show. You could be done with the whole thing in 2 hours. It's really, really a fast watch. So saying that, spoiler time, as they get deeper into the show and as we learn more about both Mr. Gon's connection to the Max and Julie's connection to the Max and Julie's connection to the Outback, all of this stuff gets very, very dreamlike and weird and dark, but also funny. Like the whole episode where, I guess it was the episode with the crap on, which is such a terrible name. Character that is like when he's in the cartoon and all of a sudden he's drawn much more like a traditional American cartoon character. It's like, I've got dark lines and I'm flatter and all this stuff. He speaks in rhyme and all of this stuff. It gets very challenging, but it's as we learn that the Outback is not necessarily Max's Outback, but it's Julie's. And as she starts to come into her own realization about that, that's where it starts to affect Max more oddly. And there's also just the idea of memory and how neither of them can really distinctly remember what's going on in either world when they first are there, and they have to kind of reacclimate and sort of like catch up to what they're doing, especially because they seem to transition to these things in the middle of battles, in the middle of fighting things. It's very, very confusing and weird. And there's just also kind of the idea that, and I don't know if this is real or my interpretation of, I don't know how much of any of it was actually them going into an alternate world versus just disassociating, and that's how they perceive things going on in the real world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that is the cool thing about this, because you get an ending, but you don't get one that really it ends in a way that forces the viewer to posit what's going on. And that's what I really appreciate about the, and I'm honestly shocked that MTV aired something like this.
Yeah.
Knowing what they would eventually air all the time. So I'm just like, okay, this is an incredibly intelligent, dark, insanely insightful and incisive comic book adaptation that is done in these little 11-minute chunks. I would say 10-minute chunks because the first minute is just the intro.
Yeah.
but these 10-minute chunks, which is wild. And the weird thing is you would think, oh, well, if there's 13 10-minute chunks, why don't they just put in a movie? It really does feel like episodes of a show. And I don't think it would work cut together as a movie.
Cut together as a movie, it would be really weird. And I say that as being someone who literally watched it almost all back to back to back.
I watched it back to back, but I still, you need it segmented like that. Which, unlike the recent Malcolm Middle revival, you didn't. Excellent revival. Awesome reboot that, or I guess revival that captures the tone of the original. But in the same way, like, there are some things that feel like they need to be little like movies, and there are some things that are like, no, this needs to be segmented like chapters of a book, you know. Yeah. And or issues of a comic, and
you know, they do feel like issues of a comic.
They really do because
comic books don't take that long to read, you know.
Yeah.
And that is really what it feels like. And just the places they go, especially as you start getting into the other characters. Like, we talked about Mr. Gon. Mr. Gon's sort of the big bad in that he's horrible. I don't want to use the term that they use very frequently to describe the things that he does to women in the world. But they use that term a lot about him.
Yeah, Mr. Gon is a messed up character. There's no way around that.
But it's weird because though he's the villain, he's not opposed to the two main characters. I don't really understand what his whole deal with either of them are, despite the fact that I know what is eventually revealed about him.
I'm sure more gets revealed in the
This is the other thing. After watching the show, I sort of looked up some things, and I kind of wish I hadn't, but more is revealed about what is going on in the comic books more distinctly and directly. And of the things that I know that are revealed about what the Max is and how the Max relates to Julie and the Outback and all of that is fully revealed in the comics. And knowing that and watching how that's revealed in the show, it's done so stylistically and artistically. Mm-hmm. And I love the show version of it so much because it doesn't give you all the answers. It gives you hints and flashes at answers, but it doesn't just flat out tell you. And I really want to read the book now to know whether that's how it's handled in the book or not, because it's so like intriguing and all of and yeah, it's very, very wild. The show goes so many different places. I have a hard time talking about what, because you have all this big lead up and you have Mr. Gon capturing Julie and the Max going to rescue Julie. And then you have this weird version of the Leopard Queen in the Outback that's like creepy and distorted and brushing the hair off of dolls. And then all of a sudden we switch perspectives to this other character named Sarah. And that is a whole other thing, as Sarah's episodes are super dark and she brings a gun to school and all of this stuff. And it is done. She's sort of becomes sort of the monologue character. And she actually has an internal monologue. She's not just talking out loud.
Yes. And I, And I'll tell you what, though, so much of this feels like the indie slash art slash goth scene, comics, music space of the mid-90s. Like, this is, I mean, standard goth.
It is. It's standard, like, we're not doing what Marvel and DC are doing. We're doing our own thing, and we're gonna have a bad guy that we're just gonna say the things that he is doing that are awful. We're not going to imply it. We're going to say it out loud. We're going to
And
have
he's gonna say it out loud.
and he's gonna say it out loud. We're gonna have a kid that is clearly disturbed and has things going on due to unresolved issues with her father who killed a bunch of people and then himself, maybe.
Maybe.
That is its whole own thing. And we're going to have conversations about what it means to be a social worker in a weird,
A freelance social
a
worker, by the
freelance
way.
social worker in a city that doesn't seem to appreciate it and also doesn't give anything back.
I also, I love goth cities in comics and media in the early to mid 90s.
Oh, they're
They're
great.
so oppressive. You
They're
think
great.
of The Crow, you think of Spawn, you think of these massive, like, gothic
I mean,
skyscrapers, shadows everywhere,
Batman the
Batman
animated
animated
series is
series.
a
Yeah, absolutely. I would count that among them. But, like, they are just like, they're characters among themselves. They are absolutely part of everything. And this city is, I mean, it really does remind me of Spawn's the animated series a lot in that respect, even though this predates it by 2 years, I think.
Yeah, but the Spawn comic was out by this point.
Yes, the Spawn comic was out, but I'm really talking about just how this kind of subgenre, or not subgenre, but like sub culture, like, showed these cities, that this is how they depicted the big cities that their superheroes lived in. And I think that's also something to talk about again, is it's dark, it's weird, it's surreal, it asks really messed up questions, and it's also really goofy and funny.
Yeah, it's that like
Like, it's the tonal shifts in this show are wild. You will have a really dark dissection of a serial rapist, and then you will jump to the Max just goofing around with, like, made up rabbits in a made up land and having crazy and, like, Bugs Bunny style adventures at the same time. It is wild tonally.
And then Julie will come in and say, I got Pez because the Max loves Pez.
Which I wish that was more of a thing, because they make it seem like the Max loves Pez like Scooby loves Scooby Snacks, but
I
like,
wonder if they could only get away with so many references on
or
screen.
like they couldn't actually depict it, but they can say it.
Yeah.
And so when Julie's the Leper Queen, they have her make look like Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, like a very kind of classic style, the leopard bikini and spear with the flowing blonde hair. It's
Yeah.
been done so many times and done very well by many people, but Sam Keith and team stylistically killed it here.
For sure. And then you start getting into the other side of things as Julie gets more and more into sort of realizing that the Outback is maybe real and the Max takes her there. And then the Max is interacting with like a weird facet of Julie's personality that is stuck as a kid and never grew up. And there's this other aspect that is this corrupted leopard queen that, you know, and each one of them has a different, completely different animation style. And it's just all of the stuff mixing back and forth and seeing the characters depicted in so many different ways is so, like, I don't know how they did it in 1995. Like, what was the budget of this show? I can't tell you because there's just not a ton of information readily available. This show doesn't have its own Wikipedia page. It's buried in the main, the Max Wikipedia page. You know what I mean? Like, It's just not that out there. But as it gets to through everything, and I'm getting lost in trying to remember everything about this book for things I wanted to talk about. I did love a lot of the Easter eggs, like the two kids that were clearly designed off of Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
The Max watches Beavis and Butthead on on TV. The musical riff every time they turn on the radio of I'm in love with the school bus driver, which is just weird to listen to over and over again. The fight choreography with the fights is so good and so cool. I loved this. I can't believe this is not just readily available for people to watch right now.
Yeah, I cannot believe this is not on Paramount Plus. Like, it's insane. Like, and not only that, but like, I don't know what the right situation is, but it's not that this is like some like 10 season, 22 episodes per season. This is 13, 11 minute episodes. Like it would take nothing to put them in your service.
Yeah. And apparently the DVD only exists through Amazon's manufacture on demand create space.
Yeah.
Like, you bought it and they would manufacture the specific thing. There was not even a full run of the DVD available.
It's wild to me. I don't understand a lot of stuff not being available, but you know,
yeah, I don't fully understand what happened in this, but that's okay.
No, but that's what I like about shows like this is that I don't have to 100% get on the first watch, and it allows us to talk about things and let it run around our heads. And sometimes it's perfectly fine for a piece of media not to give you all the answers, because sometimes looking for those answers and discussing the possibilities about those answers are far more interesting than the answers you get in the first place. Like, in any situation where I've had a decades-long mystery, I have never been satisfied with being given the answer.
Yeah.
Nothing is a better example of that than Wolverine Origins. Like, getting Wolverine's origin is fine. It sold like hotcakes. Everyone wanted it, and it got converted to all the movie properties and everything. It's been canonized and everything. It's fine. But after decades of mystery about Logan's origin, finding out that you were some Confederate rich kid. Cool.
Yeah, slam.
I don't care at all. I don't think he was Confederate, but he was the son of some rich guy, and like it was an early mutant. Cool. It's not interesting at all, and that's fine. It shouldn't be, but at the same time, like, sometimes things don't need to be answered, and it's more interesting to me than to get hints and to discuss and have conversations about what does this mean? Like, is this all in Julie's head? Are the Max and Julie separate people who are somehow connected? Is this all in the Max's head? Is it all in Dr. or Mr. Gon's head? Like,
is the Max Julie's spirit animal? Because spirit animals are a big part of this, which, as well.
I know that's a huge part of the comic, and they just scratch the surface in this one because Sarah brings it up a good bit. She stares at this horse gargoyle on a building all day.
and she's waiting
for it to like give her life's mission or something.
And we know what the Max, what Julie's spirit animal is, and there is some hints that maybe the Max, because the Max is wearing a mask and he doesn't take the mask off, so we don't know what he looks like underneath. And what is he underneath? Is he even human underneath? Is he an alien? Is the whole conversation about, you know, who he is or what he is. And that's an interesting thing when early on the two kids are talking about the Max and how cool he is because he's big and strong and nobody can beat him and all of this. And then later on in the show, we return to those same two kids. And it's like, well, the Max is big, but he sucks. He's not good at his job. But Mr. Gon, he's really cool because he's evil enough to take out his enemies, but the Max can't do that and all of this stuff. And it's I don't know. There's a lot that's being said in this show that I think is just quite interesting.
There is so much interesting stuff that happened in this show. And I think that's what's so compelling about it. That sounds such a stupid thing to say, but like, it is really compelling that a lot of the interesting things happen in this show that aren't explained. And I don't think it's a bad thing to explain like crazy things that happen if that's your intention. That was certainly Sam Keith's intention with the book, but he probably knew the show has like one shot. And so I think it was the smart move to like take out some of that stuff to like culture questions. And like, cause you have 10 minutes. He doesn't even have a full animated episode time. He has 10 minutes.
But the and but the amount so of stuff they pack 10 minutes. Into those 10 minutes. Yes. And we are on the same page with that. They are just cramming stuff into these 10. Like you could not, if I had watched this without looking at the time code, I would not believe that it was a 10 minute episode. There's so
I also wouldn't believe
this
is 1995, to be perfectly honest. No,
I wouldn't either. It's again,
especially the American animation.
Yeah.
And not only that, but like one thing we haven't talked about, because with the exception of like one other person, maybe, like, I don't know that many people worked a ton after this, but this voice cast is excellent.
So good. So the Max himself.
R.I.P.
Did he pass away?
Last year.
Oh, man.
I know. Like, as soon as we decided to do this, it's like Sam Keith passed away last month. Michael Haley passed away last year.
Yeah, Michael Haley was not known for a lot. He was apparently an uncredited student in Greece. He was, of course, the Max. And he did a voice in Diablo. Glynis, is that how you pronounce her name? I'm not sure. Glynis Talkin, she is the voice of Julie. She is probably best known for being the voice of Sarah Kerrigan in StarCraft, which was huge.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah.
Although she has been in a ton of other voice acting gigs. She's in both Diablo and Diablo 2 as well. She's been in the old Star Wars Dark Empire games. Like she's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it looks like she's done a lot of audiobook stuff, especially with Star Wars. And writes her own fantasy books, apparently.
Yeah, which was like,
hey, good for her. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, Mr. Gone. His voice sounded so familiar, but I didn't clock him from.
He's in WoW, but I don't know who he is in WoW.
Which means that he wasn't in anything that I could really clock. Like he did a bunch of anime voice acting, so I'm sure there's some. Like, he was in 8th MS Team, the Gundam 8th MS Team, but as additional voices, so I don't know.
Right.
I don't know who he was in that. Like, he's in Macross Plus. I couldn't clock his voice for Macross Plus, but he's just a voice. It doesn't say who he voices in that, So it's like...
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about that.
It says he's Steiner Hardy in War of the Pocket.
Interesting.
Gundam 0080.
Thank you. I knew what that was, but
I know you knew what it was. He's also apparently the dubbed voice of Dren in the Gundam movies 1 and 3.
The 99 dub. Yeah. So that's the VHS dub that you can't watch anymore.
Yeah. Well, I just figured you would recognize that.
I do, but I've never seen that version. I only know that's the version that has Steve Bloom as Char.
Right.
But it also has British Bright Noah, who is very funny, who calls it a Gundam. He doesn't call it a Gundam, he calls it a Gundam.
Just like when you get the Macross
I don't want to talk about that.
Or Macross.
I'm annoyed by that so much.
I think it's the only way Mike says it.
To make fun of me, yes. Because
I think initially, yes, but then it just happens. Like, he said it to me when you're not around.
Because he watched that dub when it was easy to get. When that dub was new, he watched that dub. And
it happens.
The voice of Sarah. I wanted to give another call out to you know, the voice cast. The voice of Sarah was on 88 episodes of the Sweet Valley High TV series.
Oh wow. Never seen a single episode of that. I'm very familiar with what it is. I don't think I've ever watched it.
Yeah.
So going into the Max, what were your expectations compared to what the show was?
I mean,
because you were probably more unprepared than I was, because like I had at least seen it back in the day little bit.
I kind of expected something more straightforward. I knew that it was going to flash back and forth between two worlds, and I expected it to only be two worlds, and for those two worlds to be very distinct from each other, and not all of the different iterations and versions of it that we ended up getting.
Yeah, like I'm sure there's something to be some like the in the ego. I'm sure there's some sort of like, you know, layers to get into all of that, but I don't know enough philosophy to dive in.
Yeah, I also didn't expect Max to just be sleeping on Julie's couch. I expected him to be a homeless guy that would be more separated from her as a character. I didn't expect them to be like,
they have a very codependent relationship.
I did not expect her to be busting him out of jail in the first, well, not busting him out of jail, but like paying his bail and getting him out the first episode, you know?
Yeah, which is so funny because they mentioned that happens frequently, but we only see it happen once. But it's very funny. There's a lot of dark humor in this show. Like this is a show that, like, I mean, obviously, trigger warnings abound. Like this show deals with some really, really heavy stuff that deals with pretty much anything you could have a trigger for, and. So I would caution going into that. Sexual abuse and suicide are the two big ones, and I just mention them mostly so that people like know going in that that those are topics that come up and for some characters somewhat flippantly, and there is some very, very dark material, and which is weirdly balanced by some of the doofiest stuff you will see, like, and that's what's so strange.
In Mr. Gon's bathroom, he's got a cow themed bathroom that has a tail that you pull up and the water comes out, and you pull the tail down and the water stops. Like, it's ridiculous. There's no reason for that to be there other than
there's so many things on the show that are completely ridiculous. And then some things they don't explain, like the is, are never really explained other than like, hey, if you put a costume on them, normal people see them as whatever costume you gave it. So if I dress and the is is a little like kind of like little gremlin looking things.
They look like more cartoony versions of the Heartless from Kingdom Hearts.
Perfect. Yes. 100%. Yes. But if you dress up one of these guys like a granny, people just see a little old lady. Or if you dress it up like a cop, people see a cop.
Or if you dress it up like somebody that you know, they'll just see the person that you know. But
yeah,
the Max can see through their costumes when nobody else can.
Or can at least sense that something's off about them.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things where, like, my first reaction after finishing the series was like, man, I really want to read the comic because there are so many issues. So I feel like, you know, stuff got glossed over or stuff that wasn't explored is explored more in the book. And like, I like that both of these things exist because I agree with Drew that like, I do love that we don't have the answers for everything, but I want to see how Sam Keith gives those answers in the book because it could just be just as satisfying. Like, because I will say we've read like the Wikipedia entries, so we know like what happens in black and white, but that doesn't mean that's how it's executed in the comic.
Yeah.
So I really, this makes me really want to read the book, and it's really annoying that it's largely out of print except for like probably digital issues, because I know IDW
unfortunately I'm not seeing any digital issues on I'm not seeing it on Amazon. It's possible Image might have a digital issues section, because
I would assume the Batman stuff is at least available, because that came out in like 2020 and it had a Kindle edition.
I mean, I just searched for the Max on Kindle, and I don't find anything. So
that's wild. Just because of, like, this is a pretty seminal. I mean, I know it's not as massive as like Spawn or some of the other stuff that came out of Image at the time, like Wildcats or Youngblood or whatever.
I'm sorry. What'd you say? Did you say Wildcats?
Yeah.
Say it one more time.
Wildcats.
Wildcats. It's a deep cut reference.
Yes, it is. I do really, really love just kind of everything about this property. Like, it's weird, and it's exactly what like you would expect an independent superhero book coming from an independent comic book company in the mid-90s. That, I mean, and the comic itself came out, Image was hardly a year old when the first issue of the Max comes out. So, like, there is something vibrant about it, because Image at the time was probably the biggest platform for a non-DC Marvel comic book person to have their work out there. That was the effort Image was making. And I think it's kind of hard for people to see that now, because the publishing landscape is so different.
Yeah.
But Image doing what they did when they did it was pretty monolithic. And for a book to have that kind of, like, the Max has that underground comics quality. And that we kind of talked about a little bit last week. It's what makes it the perfect thing for MTV animation, and especially for something that was loosely connected to Liquid Television, and to follow that kind of independent animation spirit. Like, this, they could not have picked, I think, a better title.
No, it is so unique, and it's honestly something that I don't think they'd put it on the air today. I think that they'd be scared off that it would be, this is like, it was right time, right place. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
It's so weird and so heady and so dark and serious and so goofy, all these things that we've talked about at the same time, that I feel like they would have, if it was MTV even 10 years later, I feel like they'd have a hard time putting this on. That it would be too odd. It would be too, people aren't going to get this. What kind of ads are we going to sell on this? It needed to be of that era to really succeed. I feel
like it would have found its people in the same way that something like Over the Garden Wall.
I'm not saying it wouldn't find its people. I'm saying the powers that be wouldn't give it a chance.
I mean, I think they would allow the 13, 10-minute episodes to get released in some form or fashion, but I don't know. It's tough to say.
Swim would have run it, but
I have a hard time subscribing to the general, oh, you couldn't do this today nonsense that I hear all the time from usually boomers. And I'm like, no, you could. It's just people would call out nonsense, which they should. This is not a glorifying nonsense. This is dealing with a lot of heavy things. but it's not glorifying it.
Yeah.
And that, and it's also not making light of it. And that's a very, very different thing from the typical, oh, you couldn't do this today.
Well, except when it does make light of it, like when the Max crushes what appears to be a human being. You killed my hostage. And then it's revealed, oh, it's great that you knew that was my CPR dummy. Oh, yeah.
But that
of
was
course
funny.
I did.
But see, that was great. No, that was a good joke. I loved that joke. I thought it was really funny.
It's a good joke. It's a good joke.
That was absolutely fly today. Are you kidding me? No, I had a great time with this series. I really, really liked it. I do.
I'm so happy having seen it because I feel like it's something that, again, I would not have gotten it had I watched it in 1995.
Yeah, watching the Max is like finding a really cool record you never heard before.
Yeah.
Like, I just found this really cool cut from 1995. You got to hear it. It changed my life. Like, it's that kind of vibe. And is the Max going to change your life? No, but it honestly is a pretty insane project. Like, it's got amazing voice acting, a surreal story, and animation that I just didn't think MTV in 1995 could be capable of.
It's really, I know we keep saying this, it's really good.
It's really, really good. Like, I'm constantly shocked by it, and the entire time I'm like, no, this can't be right. This has got to be like touched up. No, this is really good. I can't speak highly enough about the animation for the Max. I think it's incredible. I think it's something that if you're listening to this show and anything we said sounds somewhat interesting to you, through all of our, you know, babbling about this show that's kind of hard to penetrate, I highly recommend seeking it out and watching it. It's not going to take more than 2 hours of your time. And I mean, honestly, I really think that even if you don't like it, I still think you should see it. I think it's a very important piece of American animation in a time where adult animation was still trying to find its place in this country. And really wouldn't for probably in full, I would say almost another decade. And I don't come out with like things. I know these things exist. I'm talking about the full acceptance. Because I don't want to hear about wait till your father gets home or God, the devil, and Bob. Like, I know these things existed. So shut up. Because I'll have someone like pop up and be like, you know, and I'm like, yes, that's not what I was talking about. But I do think this show is kind of like, I mean, like find that great record. Oh, why did no one listen to this? Because that band was a band's band. That was a band that your favorite band listens to. And sometimes those things are artists that aren't popular or never broke through or got screwed over by a label or something happened, but your favorite band knew a guy that knew a guy, or your favorite band knew the drummer or something, and this is the best band to ever do it, and no one listened to them. This is kind of like finding one of those.
Yeah, and you say that, and when we talk about the creation of it and knowing that the guy that founded Rough Draft Studios, this was their first project, and how influential and involved in so many huge animation projects over the years that Rough Draft Studios has been a part of.
Right, because that's what makes this so influential, because if this had failed, what was their next project?
Their next project?
Yep.
After
the Max, what was the next project? I assumed you had the thing open. I can tell you. Some of you.
Yeah, I didn't. So. Okay.
The next project they had was Futurama. So imagine if the Max just completely just doesn't work.
Well,
Futurama had Matt Groening. That was going to get made no matter what. That's fair.
The guy worked on The Simpsons for a lot of stuff.
But like, you think of the stuff that they ended up doing, Clone Wars, Drawn Together, which, you know, fine. The less said about that, the better.
Rough Draft Korea worked on The Simpsons from 1992 to still working on it today. So They were involved. they were involved.
And they've been involved with every groaning project, right? They're involved with Futurama, they're involved in Disenchantment.
I'm just going off of this is just so Rough Draft USA, Rough Draft Studios has I collapsed it. Hang on. Wikipedia. The Max, Futurama, Baby Blues, Clone Wars, Drawn Together, on and on and on. Rough Draft Korea, which is more of the, like, this is not their artistic studio. This is their people in a room drawing individual frames of stuff, right?
Right.
Ren and Stimpy.
Mm-hmm.
The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Beavis and Butthead.
Mm-hmm.
The Critic.
Mm-hmm.
Timon and Pumbaa.
Mm-hmm.
Eek the Cat.
Love Eat the Cat.
Rocko's Modern Life. I'm skipping some. Rocko's Modern Life. Dexter's Laboratory. Pinky and the Brain. What a Cartoon. King of the Hill. Angry Beavers. Johnny Bravo. Cow and Chicken. I Am Weasel. A show we're about to talk about in a couple of minutes. Cat Dog. Oh yeah, cartoons. But weirdly, only season two of the show we're about to talk about. That's weird. The Powerpuff Girls, SpongeBob SquarePants,
jeez.
Family Guy, Samurai Jack, on and on and on and on and on. And another
including
show,
your favorite Harvey Birdman.
Another show we're going to talk about in a couple of weeks.
Not Harvey Birdman. The show is not Harvey Birdman.
No, but like, that's the thing. Like this, the Max was a starting point for animation. It was a starting point for animation. Absolutely. Like Greg Vanzo, who directed this show, went places, mm-hmm. and is still going places. Like his work and his influence is on so many things, which is just absolutely astronomical. And it all came from here. It all came from the Max.
And he only directed one episode of The Simpsons, season one, episode four. There's No Disgrace Like Home.
Yeah. But he did direct a number of first season Futurama episodes, including The Problem with Poplars, which is one of my favorite episodes.
I'm looking at the ones he did, and I'm like, oh man, all those are just bangers.
Yeah. It's like when you have somebody that's just that good enough, they make it happen, you know?
Yeah. Go watch The Mask. This show is excellent. It is, I think, a high watershed mark for adult animation in the 1990s. It should not be just a cult favorite. This is one that should be, I'm sure it is taught, maybe probably taught in animation schools and stuff, but this is absolutely cultural milestone. And it's kind of, again, an indicator of like, hey, you know, they may have been corporate, but remember when MTV was kind of cool?
Yeah. And
yeah, this is the time.
All of these episodes are currently available, including one we didn't watch, on different services for purchase, which they're not.
At least there's that.
Yeah, it's $19 on Amazon. It's $19 on iTunes. Currently on
sale. Honestly, worth it.
Currently on sale in both places, and it includes episode 14 recap of the entire series from the perspective of Mr. Gone, which is maybe interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that being interesting. I could also like be fun without
yeah. Unfortunately, the comic doesn't seem to be available anywhere digitally, which I haven't checked Image's specific app, but you know, maybe we'll do that soon.
Yeah.
All right, so Miles, I think that's all we can say about the Max right now, because boy, I feel like we barely talked about it. I feel like that's the weird thing about this. We talked a lot about it, but it says so much and it does so much and it's so different and weird every 5 minutes that I feel like we barely scratched the surface on actually getting to it.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's where I think next week's show will hopefully be a bit easier to handle.
I think it will be.
So we talked last week on Liquid Television and how season 2, episode 1 of Liquid Television was the debut of two very particular characters that kind of helped define the 1990s. And their names were Beavis and Butthead. Wow, that probably isn't going to play, my little impression there. I think my Beavis laugh has gotten better than my Butthead laugh over the years, but you can be the judge of that. But those two guys, unfortunately, their show is kind of difficult to watch today because where a lot of the interstitial story bits are still there, the core of that show is watching them watch music videos. And that's just hard to find that content to the point where I didn't even look for it because I didn't want to track down like the worst quality VHS rip or whatever. However, there was a third character that showed up from time to time on that show that ended up getting their own TV series not that long after. Yes, we are talking about Daria Morgendorfer, because we are going to cover the first 5 episodes of the first season of Daria.
Yep. I didn't know if I was supposed to follow that up with something. Yeah.
I thought you were going to do la, 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 la,
I thought
la.
About it, but then I thought better of it. So Daria is a show you have seen before, though, right?
I have, because okay. Daria was still on the air when MTV came to my hometown. So I was aware of her and I was aware of her show, but I didn't really watch it because it was in its like 4th or 5th season by the time it came to me. And I felt like I had missed out on a lot. Now, this is one of the things that is, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about this next week. This show is not a Mike Judge show. It is a spinoff of Beavis and Butthead, but it's very different, even though it's the same character. But this show had 5 seasons and 2 films. It was pretty popular, and it sort of weirdly is going to be an interesting reflection on Miles and my personal lives, because Daria is kind of our age. Daria is kind of going through high school while we were going through high school, but not necessarily being written by someone that was going through high school when we were going through high school. So that'll be an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, we talked about that before we hopped on the show, and we'll definitely talk about that next week.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the 2 Daria movies, Is It Fall Yet and Is It Graduation or Is It College Yet, are not available for streaming for some reason, but the rest of the series is all available on Paramount Plus, just without kind of 2 key pieces of it. So that's why we're not going to do a look at the entire series. We're just going to focus on season 1 because that's what we have available to us. We're going to do the first, 5 episodes?
Yes.
First 5 episodes of Daria. That's going to be next week. Next week's episode is going to be late because I have a thing on next Tuesday when we record. So you won't get this one until next Friday. So I hate to keep you waiting, but maybe you can watch the Max and catch up on this week's episode. So with that said, we're going to end the show as we always do with a whole brief thing that I say before actually doing the thing that we always do. I'm very tired. If you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find everything we've done for the past 15 or so odd years. You can find us on social media, either at themoreyounerd or /themoreyounerd, just about everywhere. And you can email us, themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. You can also find us at CosmicCrit.com. That's our tabletop role-playing podcast that me and Miles play tabletop RPGs with all of our friends. It's very fun. Go to that website, CosmicCrit.com, and look in the upper right-hand corner to find the link to the Cosmic Crit Discord, where you can find your own tabletop role-playing games to play, or just talk to me and Miles all day while we are bored at work. So with that said, gang, now we are going to end the show as we always do with a rousing...
Nerd.
Out.
Two nerd for y'all.
Kept you waiting, huh?
Yeah.